I'm Elena.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers. We share knowledge regarding Sequest.
I hope we're all refreshed.
Yeah.
Revitalized.
Yeah.
After enjoying some summertime sun and waves.
Lots of waves.
Lots of waves.
Less sun. Lots of waves. Some sun.
In our annual trip up north to Michigan's Lake Superior coast.
Mm-hmm.
But we're back now.
Yes.
We're back with different water.
Yeah, we're back with different water.
As Darwin would call it, good water.
I can't say we saw any dolphins. They don't live there.
That's true.
Did see some fish bones.
Mm-hmm.
Saw a little like crawfish type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Also dead.
Yes.
Saw some birds.
Mm-hmm. Were they dead?
No, they were alive.
Okay,
good. They were doing good.
Whew.
Little piping plovers. Saw some shipwrecks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Were they dead?
Some of them.
Okay.
Some were dead, yes.
But we're here to talk about Sequest DSV in the home stretch of the second season.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's the last disc.
And because we're running out of season two, I will keep returning to Sequest ESV, an overview of Sequest Year 2, a copy of the March 25th, 1994 show Bible that is available at Sequest Vault. And this starts with some information that if it were made explicit, if any character actually said this within the first, like, four episodes of the season, would have made a lot of sense and helped some things go down.
Yeah.
Which is the new three-pronged mission of Sequest.
Oh.
Mission one, rapid response exploration.
Okay.
With the proliferation of undersea habitats, vessels, and overall activity comes the inevitable increase in scientific and serendipitous discoveries. Some incredibly wonderful, in need of further study, others deadly, requiring instant counteractive measures. In the best of times, when something is discovered, the initial response is often spasmodic, resembled organized chaos. The local authorities call in specialists, often scattered throughout the world. They scramble for gear, then everybody rides different slow boats to get there. And half the time, whatever it was that they were sent to study has already disappeared, completed its activity, or otherwise ceased to be of any scientific value. Sequest, rebuilt and state-of-the-art, refitted, solves those problems, having everything and everybody located in one place. She's a resourceful speeding torpedo that can travel faster than anything else in the water, no matter what the conditions. A floating laboratory of incredible resource, Sequest and her complement of experts are invariably the first on scene. And they remain there, stabilizing the situation until long-term arrangements can be made to continue the valuable research for the benefit of all mankind.
So, like, lasering a not mountain.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, this, I don't think, comes up much. This sounds like a season two philosophy of season one episodes that they didn't write.
Yeah.
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 But the mandate for Sequest is three-pronged, like Neptune's trident. It's not me saying that. That's this document. Mission 2, UEO Military Emissary. Showing the flag is a military doctrine as old as war and often as valuable as peace. Sequest weapons, while formidable, are largely defensive, designed to shield the ship itself as well as protectorates within its jurisdiction. This delicate leg of the Sequest mission always carries with it elements of risk. Since most of the calls involve regional powers with clearly defined problems, as opposed to global threats, Bridger always arrives intending to reason, to negotiate. Being honest, Bridger often finds himself in the same position that a current-day aircraft carrier captain is in. When sent to the coast of a warlike nation, he relies on the implied threat of the UEO to back up any aggression, not necessarily the Sequest herself. If battle were knowingly in the cards, the UEO would send in a fleet of pure, hardened military warships, after all. For instances, following a show of force, Bridger is fully willing to allow Commander Ford to take the lead. This trust in his first officer is well rewarded, with Ford continually proving himself able to handle all facets of the helm, including diplomacy. This latter aspect of Ford's command responsibilities often brings him into frictional confrontation with Navy SEAL Lieutenant James Brody, a man who itches for the challenges of combat. How ironic that Ford should find himself held in the same regard as he used to view Krieg.
Not quite.
No!
Not quite.
No, that also does not describe a lot of very many episodes one-to-one.
Mm-mm.
But it does display the, like, yeah, we all have laser guns now.
We do.
And we're going to send fire teams into places.
Yeah.
Well, pretty regularly, almost every week, they're sending a fire team someplace.
Well, and what I find actually weird in season two is any... Like, in season one, Ford has the command multiple times.
Sure,
and
yes.
And he does so greatly.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, in season two... What they actually do in season two is they have him, like, question his command.
Mm-hmm. Including today's topic.
This episode, yeah. Like, they're like, oh, I don't know. Is this the right thing to do?
There is a moment where they treat Ford taking a command of the bridge like it's a big moment. Like, this is
the
it.
First time.
It's super not.
It's so not. It's so not. And it's weird, and I don't, like, where is Rambo Ford?
Yeah, yeah. Like, this is the first time where it seems like it could really be permanent, right? Because Bridger is hurt bad. But it's not the first time, period, by a long shot.
No. It's strange.
But now, the third leg of Sequest tripartite mission, and this is what I mean. If someone had just said these words mm-hmm. on screen early on, things would have fallen into place. Things would make so much sense. The classified objective. The last, and certainly most controversial leg of Sequest assignment, is also one of the best kept secrets within the UEO. As man further pushes back the boundaries of the once impenetrable deeps, as settlers colonize areas previously uncharted, as Sequest herself delves into the mysteries of the world's oceans, man increasingly encounters new and unexplainable phenomena.
Yeah.
Here's the ghosts. Here's the myths.
Yeah.
Here it is.
Yeah.
The UEO has finally acknowledged these sorts of wondrous marvels do exist. And instead of continually being caught off guard and unprepared, they've decided to confront them head on with foresight. In essence, to seek out, explore, analyze, and interact with the inexplicable and the mysterious. You know, demon snakes.
Demon snakes.
While men like Lieutenant Brody and General Thomas may regard the magic that is the unknown as a dangerous enemy, there are many others, prominently including Bridger, who see these revelations as opportunities. Curiosity and humanism dominate as our science faction encounters. That word has survived a whole year somehow. Encounters provide new and startling chances to interact with unique forms of life and intelligence, pushing back the boundaries by which those quantities are defined. As the tour begins, only Bridger and a handful of others aboard Sequest are aware of this mandate. Lucas has been included in the secret briefing, as Darwin will feature prominently into the proceedings.
Oh, will he? Will he now?
Also, new crew members Dr. Wendy Wu, psychology being her on-the-record skill, and second-grade seaman Tony Piccolo, himself testament to the fact that weird, amazing things do exist, were not chosen arbitrarily to join Bridger. This facet of their mission promises to be exciting, adventurous, and continually surprising to both crew and audience alike. The reality of what actually lurks under the sea can be far more incredible than fantasy.
Okay.
And yeah, here's the ghosts. Here's the aliens. Here's whenever something really weird happens, we have to have a scene of Wendy having a psychic attack and collapsing.
I fucking hate it.
It keeps happening. And I feel like the way they talk about this, even though season two treats these plots differently, it feels like, hey, that alien one was really good. Let's do more like that.
Yeah.
And they don't exactly, even when they have a sequel with those exact same aliens.
Yeah.
But this document really is the bridge between season one's alien episode and guest starring Mark Hamill, you know?
Yeah.
It's an even clearer bridge between those two than the actual alien episode that came between them.
is very interesting to see what they had in mind and then what they did or did not do.
And all three of these, Mission 1 less so, but Mission 2 and 3, foreground Bridger so much.
Yeah.
Which is just not true of Season 2 as it actually happened. Yeah.
So not there. It's so weird.
Emotionally.
It's so strange.
So that's the Sequest mission. Again, something I find very, very interesting in how it shaped the season that then grew beyond that all the same. Maybe even more quickly than Season 1 grew beyond its, first page of that show Bible.
Yeah.
And so that leads us to Season 2, Episode 18, Dagger Redux.
Yes.
Written by Patrick Hasberg, whose recent credits include Watergate and Special Delivery. Not Daggers. He did not write that one.
Mm-mm.
And directed by Oscar El Costo, back from directing Dreamweaver.
Oscar Costo. That is hard to say. That is a tricky one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's why he added the L. Mm-hmm. It gives a little bit of...
You can take a run at it.
Yeah.
You've got an intermission.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of get your tongue in the right position again. That's a tongue twister. That's a nice vocal warm-up.
There's no warm-up to this episode. We start in media res with Chopper Blade screaming.
Yes! Mayday! Mayday!
There's a medevac helicopter taking this patient to the nearest UEO facility, which is the prison for the criminal insane.
Yes.
Back from Special Delivery, the Dagwood murder episode.
It's definitely the same image.
This doesn't seem to be a prison for the criminal insane. Judging by the one inmate we see, it seems just like a supermax prison for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. It's used for a lot of things.
They got different. It's different wings.
Different wings.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
What we do know is that on this helicopter there is a UEO person getting chest compressions.
I think you can even see Sequest insignia on their jumpsuit.
And so they're trying to get permission to land, and they're like, "No, you can't land here." And he's like, "Well, I'm gonna." And so as they are landing, a jeep with all these UEO guards come up with guns blazing, like, "Hey, you're trespassing."
The lead guard here is played by Brett Rice, who seems to specialize in football movies. You can see him in Remember the Titans, We Are Marshall, The Waterboy, The Blind Side, and others. He even played a football coach in Forrest Gump.
Thing to be known for.
He's Mr. Football Movie.
Football Movie Man. What is the criteria to get that to be your thing? Do you just have to actually know football?
Have you seen his face? He looks like a football man.
Yeah. He looks like the football man who's going to give you the very stern, like, "I know we're all losers, but we can do this. We can come from nothing and get that score."
He also looks like he could be an evil football man.
Yes.
He could be on the racist team of several of these race football movies.
Yes.
He could be on either side.
Maybe we should look this up and find out if he's the racist football coach.
I'm sure he is at least once. He's been so many football coaches/players. I bet Forrest Gump's football coach was racist.
Well, yeah. Yeah, they're like, "Hey, we're gonna shoot you if you don't get out of here." And they're like, "No, I got a guy dying here. What am I supposed to do?" And football coach man is, "Let him die.
Let him die. It is time for tough guy sternness."
And the
paramedics, the medevac guys, are not backing down. They're gonna save this life. God damn it.
Guy's like, "Well, you better be someone really special." And he's like, "Well, take a look at him." And he's like, I don't know, Jesus, Mary, Joseph, or something. He says something weird. And it's Commander Ford!
The naval celebrity, Commander Ford.
Yes. Like, he is starstruck. He's like, "Oh my god!"
Yeah, alright, okay, bring him in. Bring him in, boys. And so, yeah, Ford is on a stretcher, and we see this overhead shot, because we are now in the point of view of one of the inmates of this facility. Mariah! The leader of the Gelf uprising from the episode Daggers.
She has a really nice window for this being high security.
She has curtains. It's nice.
So they take Ford to the operating room, and CPR is still happening. No mm-hmm. one's, like, I don't know, added, like, a little ventilator or anything to him. They're just still, like, going strong.
You want the...
the little, like...
Yeah, the squeezy breathy face mask.
Yeah, the squeezy breezy face mask. That's what it's called. Squeezy
yeah.
breezy. It's definitely the medical terminology.
I learned that from ER.
Yeah. Give me the squeezy breathy. We got someone dying here.
Let him die. Oh, wait, no. That guy's cool. I like that
squeezy
guy.
Squeezy breezy. Squeezy breezy. That's hard to say, too. Squeezy breezy.
Yeah. Oscar L. Costa's squeezy breathy death mask. Breath mask.
Say that. 10 times fast, you'll be all ready to record your own podcast.
So while the flying paramedic is like delivering Ford's vital information
yes.
to the base doctor and like cutting his shirt open with his shirt cutting scissors.
Yeah, and getting ready to like stab him with a needle in mm-hmm, the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Which when he does, it doesn't work well. That thing.
Maybe it works really well.
The needle?
Because he wakes up.
But it's all bent.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like he slammed it into concrete and the needle just bent and he's like, what?
Ford works out.
I'm pretty sure the needle would break, not bend.
They reused this idea in the film Superman Returns starring Brandon Routh.
Yes, they did.
Yes, they did.
Yes, they did. Well, I wonder if they were big Sequest fans.
I wonder.
So yeah, Ford wakes up and pulls a gun on them.
Yes. And he and the flight paramedic start doing kung fu on the base doctor.
Yeah, they send dudes flying. And then like the other helicopter guy who is still up by the helicopter
mm-hmm.
like blows up the Jeep. And, like, a flower planter and sends some soldiers flying as he, like, gets back in the helicopter and takes off.
He has a special gun. He has a special gun that shoots explosions.
Yes. It goes boom!
Every time he just shoots into the ground and then someone flies 8 feet in the air as if there's some sort of hidden trampoline behind that planter.
Yes. Like, I get shooting the Jeep. Now they can't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Why'd you shoot the planter?
To make that guy go 8 feet in the air. So yeah, Ford and his flight buddy are just marching down the hallway looking like Robert Patrick in Terminator 2. It's fucking cool.
Ford's got his, like, jumpsuit zipped down, and you can see his chest, and then he's like,
no,
you don't get to see this anymore.
And they are busting Mariah out. Yeah.
Yeah. So they go to her door. They laser it open. And she's all like, who are you?
So this is news to her. This is not her like mastermind plan coming together.
They give her a no answer of it doesn't matter and mm-hmm. like throw her a gun. And she's like, okay, fine. Like this works for me.
And it's one of the like vacuum molded Sequest laser pistols.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so security of the island is watching this,
It's probably an island.
It's probably
an island. Everything's an island.
Well, I'm saying it's probably not an island because when it was used in the other episode, like, Ford and Brody drove up to it.
That's true.
So unless there was, like, a ferry, it's not an island.
People are taking ferries to their college classes in this show. We never know what's an island and what's not.
This is true. I mean, they did need a helicopter to get there, I guess. they're watching this and they're like, okay, we got to shut down that level that they're on. And they're like, but we got guys there.
Yeah.
And like, don't care. Poison them. Knock them out.
Yeah. They're sending the knockout gas, even though their own men are there. And we see how effective this is. The knockout gas only works on their own men.
Yes. So then they run outside and the helicopter's coming to land to get them. Ford's gun also does the blowy uppy.
Yes, yes.
Because he blows up some shit as they're running for the helicopter.
Is this a thing? We got blowy uppy and squeezy breathy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Sure, all right.
So as he jumps on the helicopter as it's going up, but he gets shot a bunch of times.
A bunch of times.
And the guy that was with him reaches out and grabs his head to try to pull him in, you know, because he has so much hair there to grab.
Because he's losing his grip. He's flailing. His friend has to drag him in by the hair.
By the head.
Yes.
Yeah. And what happens is Ford falls and the guy is left with the skin of Ford.
Because you see, he's not just acting like the Terminator. He is a Terminator. He has a silver robot skull face underneath there.
Yes. And the dude in the helicopter's just left with a mask of Ford's face.
This explains why they're so professional. This explains why they march like that. Why they're immune to knockout gas. And I love this. It's not makeup. It is an actual animatronic effect.
Yes.
And the way Robo Ford's head twitches after hitting the ground is so good.
It's really good.
It's so good.
Practical effects. They're great.
That's the last good thing I'm going to say about a special effect in this episode. Not really. The CGI ocean stuff is still as good as it always is.
All of it's better than that fucking monster in the last one.
But honestly, the other in-camera effects are what's bad.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, we'll get there eventually. And but that is time for the opening credits.
Yeah.
Here's our cast. Here's our song.
Well, when we come back from the credits, the helicopter that Mariah is in morphs into a ship and dives into the ocean.
Yeah, the helicopter shapeshifts into a submarine.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's all about. That's
cool. That's fucking cool.
Even as far as Sequest Season 2 technology goes, this is something else.
Yes.
This is a third kind of alien doing this. I don't know.
I mean, it is, because, like, this isn't even shit we get in Season 3.
Yeah.
Season 3, when we get, like, cool futuristic tech, it's from, like, the secret society type shit. Like, it's not normal. And this, they're just like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, all right.
This happens.
This guy's got this. That's what we're dealing with. Okay. But we don't follow them for very long. In fact, at all. As soon as they make their escape, we're done.
Yeah, we gotta go check in on our good buddy Tim O'Neill.
Tim O'Neill, who is pouring his heart out. He starts this sad sack monologue, quote, "Everyone in life has something happening, except me."
Yeah.
And he goes through a list of all his friends and how they, like, are happy and like their lives.
Yeah, you know, Lucas is smart and Ford is cool-headed. And Ortiz is never bummed.
It's true. He's Cuban. That's like his mantra in life.
And Piccolo, he's just happy. And then we see that he's been talking to Darwin, because Darwin is like, I'm happy too.
Darwin, happy too. Have you tried not sucking? I don't know.
And Tim's like, will you swim and eat fish? Like, I don't know how you can't be happy. I think my hair is falling out. And Darwin is like, Darwin bald, swim faster. Be like Darwin, be happy. Looker.
Darwin is not an accredited psychiatrist, right? He's not a licensed therapist of any kind.
No.
What advice were you expecting beyond, like, I don't know, try smiling once in a while?
Try doing things you like. Like eating fish.
Try liking yourself. Like, O'Neill, in this entire subplot, is so bound up in an imagined perception that he believes society has placed on him that he doesn't agree with. Yes. Is this a thing anyone in his life believes about him? His friends, his colleagues?
No.
No. But he thinks it's true anyway because he watches too many, like, 80s teen movies.
Yeah. You know the only thing that doesn't happen, though, in this whole, like, Tim plot? Is he doesn't blame it on his religious upbringing.
That's true.
We never mention the fact that he is religious in this whole thing. And I'm like, I don't know, maybe someone should have told him to go talk to a priest. Maybe set him straight.
Maybe someone should have told him to talk to Dr. Smith, whose job this is.
I wouldn't trust her. Like, that one's a crackhead. Like,
no, she cracks open your
head. Well, yeah. I mean, like, she's got a crack in her head. It's definitely, like, She's very like, well, I don't know, ghosts and shit. Yeah.
I believe Excuse me, I'm being contacted by the Avatar.
The Avatar! Obviously. We go check in with Ford and Brody and Bridger, who are watching the footage of Ford with Mariah, provided by Secretary General McGath.
Yeah, they're getting briefed personally by the Secretary General of the UEO.
Mm-hmm.
In his only scene this week.
Yes.
Yes. Brody loves the idea of Ford being involved in a prison break.
Yes.
And I love, like, this is the episode that, I don't like this episode very much. We'll talk about that a lot. But I think this episode gets the Ford-Brody relationship better than anything else. Like, it really works here for me.
Yeah. Well, because Brody's, like, the annoying brother type thing.
Yes.
Where, like, Ford is obviously, like, anytime they're like, oh, and then Ford, you, like, escorted Mariah out. And he's like, it's not me!
No, I didn't! I wasn't there! I didn't do that!
And Brody just, like, finds any moment to, like... get into it, like, oh, well, you know, we now have something in common. We were both there when she broke out of prison. He's like, it wasn't me!
No, I wasn't!
You were actually there! I wasn't!
That's a robot. Can we look at the end of the footage again? Robot! Not me! That's a Halloween mask. Doesn't even look like me. It looks just like him. It's Donald Franklin. It looks like him.
Yes. They are being called, though, however, to help speculate what happened.
Mm-hmm. The reason that Sequest is put on this case is because the robot was impersonating a member of the Sequest crew, so clearly they're in a position to be the best brainstormers.
Yes. Though, like, throughout this episode, what they're actually doing is, like, trying to trace the particles from the helicopter that transformed into a submarine.
Yes.
But, like, they don't mention that. They don't say, hey, this is why we need you. We need you as the ship in the area that
has, like, the
high
best sensor array. No,
to go try to find these particles. No.
No, it's just Ford stuff.
You look like him.
So clearly you have insight.
And Brody just, again, he's like, you got a twin? You sure you don't got a twin?
Because of this justification, this episode would be very different if, like, the robot was impersonating Secretary General McGath.
Yeah.
Then, like, they wouldn't be on the case and none of this would have happened.
Yeah.
I did like another one of Brody's one-liners as Ford is getting really, really upset with him. Says, see how you feel if they copy your face next time. And he just says, can't duplicate perfection. It's good.
Such a smart
That's
bastard.
Good.
Ford wanted to be an asshole. He could have made some, like, comment about, like, well, at least I can recognize my mom. Didn't try to date her.
Whoa, man, low blow. Come on. Suspiciously young hot moms are off limits. We all have a story. You know this.
So, Tim is moping through the halls and encounters Henderson talking to Lucas. And it's just like, she's like, oh my god, this is amazing! Tim, have you heard about this? Have you heard about Lucas?
He has published an article in a major journal, and she is over the moon. She's so proud, talking about, oh, we'll be able to say we knew him when. He was just one of the little people like us. And Lucas is playing off like, you know, I'm sure it was just a novelty thing because of my age. It's a provisional study anyway. It doesn't really mean much. But Henderson is not having that. She's ready to just, like, hoist the boy on her shoulders and march him through the mess hall.
And Tim is a grumpy grump.
He's so pissy about this.
He's Mr. Grumpy Gills.
I'm just glad someone on this boat is doing science again.
Right? Lucas is always doing science. He's always in the background doing science. We just never get to see it.
And this is like ocean soil science, not computer science.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They remembered.
He got Westphalen to co-author.
She was his beta reader.
Telecommuting. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Tim at least does say, oh, that's great, man. Good job.
But his heart's not in it.
His heart's not in it.
No.
And he runs into Dagwood.
He's jealous of a child.
A child that doesn't have parents.
He's jealous of an orphan.
I mean, like, his dad's not dead, but, like, his mom's also not supposed to be dead. But, like, basically.
Where are they? I don't see him. I don't see him.
He's jealous of a parentless child that was abandoned on a boat. Jesus, Tim.
Well, he would say, I'm being shown up by a parentless child who's abandoned on a boat.
I have a full family and I couldn't get what he got in life.
Yeah. Here I am just speaking 12 languages in middle school like some kind of loser moron. Like, what are you talking about? What are you doing? Get over yourself.
I have to work on this boat that people would be dying to work on? The flagship of the UEO? Man, I'm such a loser. Some days I have to take command of the boat, too. What the fuck, Tim?
I flashed my underwear at the hottest babe in New Cape Quest, and we immediately went on a date. Gosh, my life sucks. Okay, your date sucked. Then it started to suck.
You did fuck it up, but...
Real bad. And this is why I think this television program, particularly season 2, does not like Tim O'Neill as a character. His best showing was when Ted Raimi wrote the episode himself.
Yeah. Yeah. So he runs into Dagwood, who's, you know, cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
Changing
out some of the lighting.
Yeah, so Dagwood decides to try a joke out on mm-hmm. him. He's like, hey, Tim... How many daggers does it take to change a light bulb?
And Tim's response should be, I don't like to use that word.
But he's like, I don't know, Dagwood, how many? One?
Because he's proud of the job he's doing. He's doing a good job. Yeah.
There's only one of him on this boat, too.
It's so really sweet. Yeah. It's kind of nice.
And so then Tim's like, hey, Dagwood, how would you feel if I left Sequest? And he's like, bad. You're my friend. How would you feel?
Yeah, and when he says, I think I'd like it, then Dagwood's like, oh, well, then I'd be happy, because you're my friend. I want what makes you happy. Oh, okay.
So over on the bridge, Ford has come aboard.
Mm-hmm. Ford aboard.
We you know, have to check in on, like, oh, where's Tim? And we find out he has taken a personal day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He gives Piccolo some coordinates to go track these particles.
Yeah, yeah. And Piccolo recognizes the latitude and longitude as the center of the Indian Ocean. And now begins a scene that I don't know why it exists.
No.
Ortiz listens to the murmur as everyone's shocked that their helmsman knows where they're going.
Yes.
And says to himself, well, a stop clock is right twice a day. And Tony Piccolo does not understand this idiom and has to have it explained to him step by step. And is still like, but it's broke. How does it work? And... Were they just a few pages short on the script this week? What is this doing here?
Maybe.
It's not funny. Like, if you're going to have the story stop for Piccolo to do some business, I have an expectation that it will be funny. This is not. It's bad.
Yeah. He does say, though, and it's dumb in the moment, but it's like, he's like, oh, is this the new math I've been hearing about?
Oh, boy.
And I'm like, well...
Welcome to 1996, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about new math all the time.
I was going to say he kind of called the future, because that's like the whole thing right now is like, oh, they teach math differently than they taught math when. So when he would have been in high school would have been when they started launching, like, even more the new ways of teaching math than they used to.
It was like the educational standards that were being rolled out in the mid to late 90s were literally called new math. That was the name of the curriculum.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go to school. You think I'm supposed to know that?
So meanwhile, off the boat, in an undisclosed location, we never really learn where they went. It's a sea base.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sea base. Yeah. It doesn't matter where.
Yeah. Mariah gets let off the ship, and the two dudes go into, like, to recharge in tubes.
Yeah, the robots go sleepy.
They go sleepy. And then this guy in a wheelchair comes out, and he is evil.
He is so, so evil. He is so self-consciously evil. He ticks every evil box. This is a man who goes by a title we will learn later. Do you want to just use it now so we have a thing to call this guy?
Oh, I've just been calling him Mr. Evil until we got his name.
Sure, Mr. Evil. He doesn't have his doctorate yet. Is played by Luca Bercovici, who is best known for writing and directing the film Ghoulies. Now, darling, I doubt you've seen Ghoulies. But if you ever walked through a video rental store between 1985 and when they closed video rental stores...
I have then.
You have seen the box for Ghoulies.
Okay, are you going to show me what it looks like? Yep. I've seen this.
This is the movie where the VHS box is a little puppet ghoulie popping up out of a toilet.
Yeah.
And the tagline, "They'll get you in the end." You've now seen one of the acting roles. I mean, you've seen this previously. You saw it on broadcast as a young child. An acting role of the writer-director of Ghoulies.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Mr. Evil here doesn't waste any time introducing himself, that he is the enemy of her enemy and hopefully her friend.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they have a shared enemy, and that is... the Sequest!
And Mariah's like, "Well, I'm a dagger. I have many enemies. By the way, we can't even get into strip clubs. Have you heard? That's crazy."
And he's like, "Well, we both don't like Captain Bridger, so, like, we should be buddies.
We should be buddies.
Okay, come on!
The anti-Bridger club. We hate Bridgers. We hate Phoebe Bridgers. We hate when they have the bridge puzzle in the newspaper.
Milwaukee sucks." They got so many bridges, and all that makes me think of is Bridger.
Uh-huh.
We should blow that place up.
Yeah.
We can save the Bronze Fonz, though. He's okay.
We gotta move him. Gotta move him to a bunker.
This dude's just like, "I'm so evil. Let me tell you all the ways I'm evil."
Mm-hmm. "Did you know I'm evil because I'm in a wheelchair?" There's a lot of reasons I don't like this episode.
No.
Yeah. So once they introduce themselves to one another, we go to commercial and come back in the ward room where Captain Bridger is looking over a letter, and he looks up from this letter to inform Timothy O'Neill, the guy who learned the Vietnamese language in 3 hours, that he misspelled the word resignation. The show hates this man. The show hates him.
Letters are close by. A little typo. They're not actually close by.
No. No. I'm looking at a keyboard right now.
Yeah.
No, that's a whole hand away.
He didn't have someone like Wes Phelan to be his beta reader. He's so alone. No one cares. No one could proof his resignation letter.
And that is his argument, basically. He's like, "Well, sir, I'm such a nerdy loser, I've got to leave."
And Bridger's just like, I don't understand this.
I don't understand.
This is, you're really valuable, and, like, this is dumb.
Why does you getting shoved into lockers in middle school matter, you freak? What are you talking about?
And so Tim just whines about how he doesn't fit in, he doesn't want to fit in. Has anyone ever seen him
without this stupid jumpsuit? Glasses on? It's weird.
It's weird. I'm weird. I'm a weirdo.
All right. I'm going to skip to that thing I was writing just before we turned on the mics. All right. So This is a story about self-perception.
Uh-huh,
yes.
Yeah.
O'Neill does not like the person he thinks society says he is.
Mm-hmm.
We've already seen just in that last scene that Mariah accepts that Guelphs are non-people in this world, despite the legal status gained at the end of the episode, Daggers. Mr. Evil is a self-hating disabled person.
Yeah.
Now, none of these go anywhere.
No.
None of these characters recognize that about one another, or no third party makes these connections. None of them even open up to each other on those grounds, except for Mariah and Mr. Evil's introduction just now. And also, when in a later scene, Mr. Evil calls himself, quote, "a slave to this chair," that is ignorant to the point of offense. And none of them are as effective as Jughead at this unwanted surprise birthday party, unloading that, "Yes, in case you haven't noticed, I'm weird. I'm a weirdo. I don't fit in. I don't want to fit in. Have you ever seen me without the stupid hat on? That's weird."
That scene is perfect.
That scene is what this episode was trying to be, and it does in 20 seconds what they couldn't do in 44 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I believe Cole Sprouse's Jughead is the kind of guy that watched so many 80s movies, it broke his brain about how real people are in the real world, and is trying to fit this slot that he thinks fits him, and is upset that it doesn't. Like, my man, you put yourself in that slot. That's what that scene's about. That's why it's great. And this script ain't got it. It ain't bringing that heat.
It isn't. It's just bringing a whiny man. His whole thing with this too is he's like, I need to reinvent myself.
Yes.
I need to leave. I need to go somewhere else. And Bridger's just like, I would like to hear what your plan is. Some parts of it.
Sure.
What are you thinking here?
What you been thinking so long? And he wants to go to a nice tropical beach and take up painting and like garden with hot babes who he will paint in the natural splendor of an island. Like, he's describing a lovely retirement is what he's describing.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I'm like, do you have that much money? Can you just, like, do that? Are you sure?
And he brings up that Gauguin was a stockbroker until he began painting. So, like, people can paint who weren't born painters. I don't think that was Bridger's objection, but, you know, it's true. No one said otherwise.
You can take up painting, like, on board, dude.
Yeah.
And you guys have shore leave all the fucking time.
All the time. You are never not on the beach, you people.
But you know what? You can still get a paycheck.
Yeah.
just gonna say.
So, with the most open yet skeptical heart, he is not given the resignation he asked for. He's given 30 days leave.
Yeah, he's like, why don't you just take, like, a little break?
Yeah, just take a break.
Take this tracker with you, though.
Yeah.
Because I want to be able to find you.
Mm-hmm.
But take a little break. I do like that he gives Tim 30 days, and he gave, like, Lucas, like, 12 hours to go talk to his girls. Figure out life. Talk about marriage. Children.
Well, he knew that conversation would seal the deal. He doesn't need the other 29 and a half days. But then he got kidnapped.
Yeah. So back in the evil lair.
Yeah.
The evil dude,
uh-huh.
Mr. Marauder, just keeps fucking talking about how the world runs on power.
Power.
And real power. And this power and that power and power.
Power to make the weak serve the will of the strong. There's only masters and slaves in the world. And this is where he says, quote, I am a slave to this chair. Fuck off. So that's where that's who this guy is. That's where he's coming from.
Yeah. Then he's like, but I can harness power. Real power. Cold fusion power.
Yes.
Power that can move the earth. And you know how I can do that?
He's going to kick Lucas's dad's ass. You thought you could power the world. Fuck you.
And so his plan for powering the world is not giant power stations underwater. No, no, no. It is a reef. Because within this reef are bugs.
Ancient prehistoric bugs. There is... allegedly, a material called trillium, which is the true secret catalyst that makes cold fusion possible. And trillium is found, much like coal and oil are the fossilized remains of plants. He says dinosaurs, it's not true. It's like the trees of the Carboniferous. Never mind. Trillium is from fossilized insects.
Worms.
This is the path to true power. Both power as in domination, but the path to it is electrical power. Explosive power, because he has a tiny little bit of it. And he demonstrates this by making the reef explode a little bit.
Yeah,
with this tiny shed of a grain of sand worth.
Let's talk through it, though. So he has
okay.
this little sand.
Yes.
That he puts in a little, like, test tube.
Yes.
And then he puts it in a thing, and I guess it sends it outside to where a diver awaits.
Yes.
And the diver takes it.
Uh-huh.
Very quickly. This all happened so fast.
That diver might be another robot. We'll never know for sure.
And puts it in the reef that uh-huh. they are watching. And he swims away, and 2 seconds later, the entire reef fucking explodes. And he's like, that's as much power as a nuclear bomb, mm-hmm. which means that dude is dead.
That dude is dead.
And that little test tube had to move at fucking super speed to get it far enough away to blow up a reef that wasn't going to blow them up, too.
Also, how are they not discovered?
This is a great question.
If the UEO...
Some seismic activity just happened. We should go check that out.
If the UEO is listening to the ocean so closely that they found Darwin was still pen pals with aliens...
Yeah.
I think they would notice something exploding with the force of a nuclear bomb.
Yeah. Also, that dude's dead. That dude is totally dead. There's no way he swam away fast enough.
I think that's one of the helicopter robots. There's no reason to think otherwise. You think this guy has other friends?
And so he's like, we can have this power. We just have to mine it. Mm-hmm, and she, Mariah, is just like, wait, so you think you can mine under an underwater reef in free water without anyone finding out?
As he says, the wealth of the oceans is far beyond the fools that protect them. But Mariah knows better. Mariah knows that Bridger is an unsurmountable challenge to any who would threaten these ecosystems.
Yes, and she's like, Sequest rules the seas, and he's like, that doesn't matter, I have you, we will do this.
And he's going to equip her with an attack sub with firepower equal to that of Sequest.
Yes.
And when she says equal isn't good enough, she doesn't fight for a tie, he says, I have also genetically engineered a giant attack squid that eats Sequest's self-healing bioskin.
She's like, okay, cool. I just all need, right. like...
Okay, 2-on-1. All right, cool.
We can do this. This is fine. This is great. I just need someone who knows the Sequest. And we can make your giant squid work.
Oh, I hate squid work. He's always bothering SpongeBob. Leave him alone.
So, we go look at a lot of bikini babes.
Yes! It's a hard cut to butts. Just two butts filling the frame.
So many butts.
And as the camera moves up, those butts are attached to ladies who also have boobs.
Mm-hmm. And then there's more.
And then there's more.
And then there's more of them. And then we pan over to Tim, who is painting a girl laying on a pool lounger next to a pool with a basket of fruit and a glass of wine.
Yes. On her side, up on one arm, with her other arm raised behind her head, she's complaining about how much her neck is killing her. And of course, Tim O'Neill has the zinc nose.
Well, yes.
Of course he does.
Mm-hmm. And is yelling at her not to move, and she's like, "But you said you'd buy me lunch if I posed for you." And he's like, "Yeah, when we're done, you have to pose first." I'm like, "Dude, you go buy that girl lunch. She will suck your face."
She seems like she was really into him an hour ago.
Yeah,
and he has once again fumbled the bag so hard.
I'm like, you would have gotten lucky, sir, if you just would have gone and bought the lady lunch.
Just get the lady a sandwich. Get her a Fanta. Come on, be nice. You know what the painters do? They take breaks.
But as he's arguing with her, this old dude comes up and is like looking at his painting and like, hey, you painting her? And he's like, yeah, doesn't look like her.
Head's too small.
It looks like her. No, it doesn't.
No.
It's really not good. Really not good painting. You could do better.
While this poor woman is looking just absolutely disgusted. Also disgusted with how pale Tim O'Neill's legs are.
Yes. So then we flash over to Mariah, who is on her new fancy ship with a new evil pleather outfit.
Yeah, she's dressed like Trinity in The Matrix, but that doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
That's two movies directly lifting from this episode.
Yeah. So now Tim is painting in a park.
Yes.
Mariah, not in her evil outfit.
No, she gets two costume changes within 10 seconds.
Comes up behind him, and she's like, oh, I'd love to watch an artist work. The flirting is high with this one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Racialized flirting.
Yeah, it's weird.
There, she has nearly all of her lines are about her status as a genetically engineered being, including two in a row about her pigmentation.
Yes. So they start on it with this whole thing about, like, how he's painting buildings, but he doesn't like to paint buildings. And he's like, why are you doing that? Because I ran out of people. And she's like, well, I'm here. You could paint me. When he doesn't immediately say yes, she's like, oh, is it because I'm a dagger?
And he says, some of my best friends are daggers. Well, when he should say, I don't like to use that word.
Yeah, yeah. And then she's like talking about, like,
oh yeah, my friend is one of the good ones. Jesus, Tim, what are you doing?
And then she says shit about, like, well, do you not have enough colors in your palette to paint me? Like,
yeah. Whoa, okay.
It's so again, weird.
She, like O'Neill, is obsessed with putting herself in the box she believes she's been put in by others. Okay. I don't like it. It's not, like, I see what you're going for, and therefore I see how far you missed. You know?
I also just have to point out, hey lady, if you're trying to, like, seduce him to get him to do what you want, I don't know if you should do it this way. It's a little awkward.
It's a little awkward.
But then she's like, well, maybe you should try. And she, like, walks away from him a little bit and then starts stripping in a public park.
Yes!
They're in a public park. And she, like, takes her, like, sundress straps down and it, like, drops some on her back.
Sure, it's a public park, but he already chased away everyone else by being a big jerk.
And then Tim's like, you know, look a little familiar. Have we ever met? And she's like, fuck yeah. And she turns around and tases the fuck out of him.
And, you know, Ted Raimi, you know he came up in goofy horror movies because he tases so hard.
Yes.
It's just, oh.
And then, after he's been tased,
yeah,
he, from out of the shot, he gets grabbed and pulled off screen, but at, like, five times the speed.
It's very goofy. It's very silly.
And what is left behind in that super speed pull is his tracker.
His tracker is left in the park. Oh no. No one picks it up and turns it in.
No.
It's just left there forever.
Well, because he scared everyone away.
Yeah, there you go. So yeah. It's okay to strip.
It's just a little weird. A little weird. I also am like, hey, Tim, maybe you should be like, please don't. It's a public park. Like, we could get arrested. Like, what are you doing? This is a little weird, lady. I just met you. I don't do nudes. At least not in public.
Draw me like one of your French genetically engineered life forms.
So back on the Sequest, Wendy is really pissed at Bridger that he didn't call her, the ship's counselor, to counsel.
She's very upset at not being involved in a matter of her specific professional role.
I'm like, I don't care.
Of course you don't. And after they have this brief argument, she goes into her fully wood-paneled quarters.
Yes.
To instead perform her dramatic role, which is having a psychic attack.
Which sounds interesting. She's supposed to sound like she's in pain, but she doesn't.
Yeah, what does she sound like?
She sounds like she's having some time there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
The sort of time Tim isn't having because he's too big of a jerk?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's really the wrong types of sounds.
But I appreciate the, we are filming her in the center of a circular track. So it's just like going around and around, seeing all four walls of this set. It's pretty cool. And she keeps flashing into the place of Mr. Evil in his evil chair.
Yeah, which
kind of his evil lair.
Doesn't make sense because you're like, okay, she's obviously having this because Tim just got tased. But that's not who she's seen.
Well, his hate is coming off in such powerful waves.
Is that what it is? It's the hate of this man?
I don't know.
I don't understand why she suddenly knows who this, like, she's seen this dude.
It's Trillium? Trillium does it? Is it Trillium?
Did he snort too much? Did his brain explode? And so she's like, oh my god, what is this?
Maybe Trillium is psychic, because as she spends time, like, in this man's shoes, she is covered in mealworms.
Yes. as she sits in his chair, and she's looking at a screen that keeps flashing, like, MS Paint words of the Marauder, and then Tim's face.
Now, an interesting historical fact, the studios at Universal Studios Orlando would go on to be the filming location for the television program Fear Factor.
Oh.
This is probably, unless some of the Nickelodeon shows got up to some business, the first, but certainly not the last time, someone had mealworms dumped on them in this studio.
I could never, ever, ever watch that show. No.
A lot of the Madagascar hissing cockroaches, they loved those things on that show. Loved them.
Never. I cannot. Someone was like, hey, you want to go on this? And, like, you will get $1 million for going on this show. Not, like, a chance to win. We will give it to you. I'd be like, no, I'm fine.
Like, on signing, you get $1 million.
Yeah, no, I'd be like, still no.
No. No.
I'm fine. I will not do that.
No, you take $1 million and then you just don't get on the plane to go. What are they going to do? Arrest you?
Probably.
I'm flying to Tahiti like my hero, Tim.
So she has this attack where she's given a lot of information with no reason.
All the information needed.
Mm-hmm.
None of the reason it would come through psychic flashes. They are currently in the midst of an investigation.
Yeah.
Why is that not the thing that works?
I don't know. But this happens, so now she goes to, like, Lucas and Bridger and, like, gives them all the info of what she knows. And he's like, well, you know, there was a famous hacker that was known as the Marauder back in the day.
A hacker hero. He cracked everything.
He cracked the George Bush Center for New World Order.
There's a joke from the mid-90s. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
He was kind of like a hero for a lot of other hackers, like Lucas, because he hacked all the things that were worth hacking.
And then he went dormant, and nobody knows what happened. Some people thought the CIA got him. Some people thought he went into private work, like our good friend Tim Russ, I guess.
And then he's like, but, you know, some think he's still out there, and you know, there's some who, like, think he's Dr. Russell Kitchen.
And the reason people think this is because everyone knows that the Marauder, the hacking identity, was, and this is Lucas's words, emblematic of the mid to late 90s, differently abled.
Yes.
Huh. Okay. And yes, this public figure who is linked to the Marauder identity, even if only by rumor, is also a wheelchair user.
Yes.
There you go.
He was a famous child prodigy who faked a paper on cold fusion, saying, like, it would come from petrified, like, the power source would come from petrified insects or something. It's crazy. And then he got kicked out, so he tried to shoot the dean, and they never found him.
Yeah.
I can't imagine why that guy would be a hacker. I feel like we should be putting these pieces together a little more quickly of, like, Marauder, worms, fusion.
I feel like this nut should have been cracked 12 years ago. Before he had a chance to do any of the current business.
Yeah.
But yes, we have yet another child prodigy who went underground and has returned to take revenge upon the scientific community. The Marauder, the Regulator, they even sound the same.
Marauder's nowhere cool as the Regulator.
No!
Luckily, Lucas does not seem to have any hero worship of this man left at this point. Like, back in the day, I thought he was cool, but
sure,
like...
Sure, yeah, I like his credits, but I'm not into the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've grown up.
Yeah. But much like the Regulator, there is a prominent fruit in this episode.
Yes. instead of bananas?
It's pineapple.
Pineapple. Dagwood is trying to figure out how to eat pineapple in the mess.
Mm-hmm. And Ortiz and Brody are talking about this as they witness it from several tables over. And Ortiz calls out, hey, Dagwood, don't eat the parts that make your mouth hurt. And Dagwood says, yes, good advice. And then he bites into the pineapple like an apple.
Yes.
That's the gag. That's the joke. He eats food funny.
I'm just over here like, but what if Dagwood's allergic and like all of it makes his mouth hurt?
Again, were they just short on pages this week? This is nothing. This is nothing.
Well, and then like Tony comes in and has this very long scene where he's mad that he as a parolee has to be stuck on the Sequest, but Tim can just leave.
Yeah.
To go like live a different life.
He has a bad day and he gets 30 days paid leave. My whole life is a bad day and I'm stuck here. That's why.
It's like, yeah. It sucks. Like, no one wants to be a sailor. And Brody's like, I want to be a sailor. And he's like, you don't count. Which I do appreciate. I appreciate that moment. Like, fuck off, pretty boy.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about you.
If I was like script editor on the show, what I would do is it would be Ortiz, Piccolo, Ford, and Lucas. It would be the four guys O'Neill was comparing himself to earlier, and they would all be talking about how they are also upset about their life sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And Ford would have Brody's line. It would be just as good for him to have. So you don't lose that. But it would really interact with where O'Neill is coming from and his perspective and just like poking holes in it from afar. Like, you could fix this. You could fix this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could make it more meaningful and have a reason for happening.
And that means we don't have time for pineapples, boohoo, or broken clocks.
And like,
oh God, I hate that scene.
Tony says at the end of this too, like, because Ortiz says, I think it's Ortiz that says it, like, oh, well, he wants to be a painter. And Tony's like, painters don't get to be that until they, like, die.
Yeah,
like, no one gives a shit until they're dead.
Yeah, yeah.
And I kind of feel like that's advice that, like, Tony should have had the opportunity to give to Tim. Like, that's great, dude.
That's great, dude.
But you're not gonna, like, make any money off of this until after you're dead.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, like, don't quit your day job.
True of Paul Gauguin. Not as true as some of his contemporaries, but he was not really a big hit until he passed.
Yeah. Over on the ship, Tim wakes. He is in a chair with a force field around him, and Mariah is there. And she's like, hey, I want the stealth codes for Sequest. And he's like, no. And she's like, fine, gonna electrocute you.
And so he is zapped. And then when the zapping is finished, he still says no. So she zaps him again, and he still says no. And then she does a special extra zap with another, like, woobly effect that goes from his toes to his head. And then, in sort of a hypnotic voice, gives the coats.
Yes.
Yes. He keeps getting electrocuted. This is bad.
Yeah.
It's gotta hurt.
He's
gonna get a heart arrhythmia from this.
So we quickly go over to the Sequest where Bridger's like, hey, we gotta find O'Neill. Track him. And they're like, okay, well, we're going to have to, like, stop this particle search. And he's like, that's fine.
That's fine. Fuck the particle search. I hate particles.
Yep.
They're bad.
And so then we go back to Mariah, and she has entered the codes and was, like, tracking the Sequest. And, like, Tim comes out of a daze being like, what happened? And he's like, you gave me the codes. And he's like,
oh, no.
And he's like, that's my friends.
You must have used the special wave pulse that makes me go hypnotized. What is that? What is
that? I don't know. Alien technology. I don't know. It's the worms. It's the petrified worms.
It's they have technology. Worms. They do incredible things.
And
they allow you to have one pilot run a ship that is the technological equal, and in some cases superior, of Sequest.
Maybe when you eat the petrified worms, it gives you, like, insight into alien technology that the worms had back in the day.
That is the nastiest tequila I've ever drank, let me tell you.
And Mr. Marauder Man was like, you know, love me a dried worm. Suddenly I know a lot of science.
I guess
no explanation about why he has this tech.
I guess he was hacking into things to, like, you know, bank transfer, pay for it all. Okay. And also his brilliant analytical mind, perhaps, has led him to take the next 5 steps on so many different fronts of cutting-edge technology. And synthesize what he's stolen from corporations A, B, and C into his robot army? I don't know. It's bad.
I'm going to say it's the worm.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. What he's also trying to do is, like, bring the worms back to life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then he's going to use the wibbly-wobbly to brainwash them to do his bidding, and then it's going to be like...
How do you brainwash a worm?
Wibbly-wobbly.
They don't have brains!
Whatever. And then... And then it's like that scene where, like, the bugs are all, like, doing the evil dance to the evil dude.
The scene where the bugs are doing the evil dance to the evil dude.
Yeah.
Is this in a particular film or television program?
In Anastasia.
In Anastasia.
Rescue, right? Okay. There's the bugs doing the, like, isn't that happen, right?
That sounds right.
It looks a lot like the hyenas in Lion King.
Sure, clear influence.
It's like the bugs.
It's more like the bugs because they are bugs.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You got the squeezy breathy.
And the zippy zappy.
And the zippy.
And then you got the bugs doing jazz hands.
So yes, back in reality and not bug dancing fanciful
in
dreams.
Yeah.
Two things happen at once. Number one, Sequest finds O'Neill's beeper signal and they're like, whew, he's on land. That means he's safe because all of the danger in this setting is ocean bound where we are.
Yes.
And then, oh no, torpedoes have locked on us.
Yes. And right at that moment, Lucas gets to the bridge and Bridger's like, sit down. And so he shoves Lucas in the captain's chair and then they get hit with the torpedoes. Bridger goes fucking flying.
He goes flying into a console. Does he go flying in a normal way?
No, he goes flying at 4 times the speed.
Yes.
Just like Tim got pulled off the screen. Bridger just... Whoosh.
We experimentally tested. We put the Blu-ray, available at Menards, but not necessarily your Menards, on like 1/4 speed, and it looked normal.
It looked normal. It looked like what it should have looked like.
But instead, they're just like, really slam him in there. Yeah, yeah.
And like, at 1/4 speed, he's still flying through the air.
Yeah.
You learn that it's not because they're trying to hide, like, him stepping or something. Which would have been fine because...
It's a perfectly clean shot, but they just speed ramp it and it looks so silly. It's bad.
And I question, if you guys had to add filler text to this episode... Why did we have to speed up that? You really didn't have an extra 2 seconds?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there's our mini cliffhanger into yet another commercial break. We come back and medical staff are taking Bridger out on a rescue board. Things look bad. It's bad.
He's unconscious.
And Ford.
Lucas is very upset.
Ford very solemnly takes the con, a thing he's done many, many times, but... Like I said at the very top of this week, this is the first time it's because Bridger is in immediate severe medical distress. That's the difference.
There is a very weird, like, moment, though, where Lucas, like, looks at him and is like, well, you're in charge now. I know. Like, what?
It's literally my job, Lucas. Please sit down.
Like, I got this. It's okay. Though I will say this is, like, the most, like... Bridger Lucas, I feel like we get in a while of like this concern for each other.
Yeah.
Throwing Lucas into the chair for his safety and then Lucas rushing to him when he's hurt.
Mm-hmm,
The most we get in episodes.
It's been a while since they've really underlined that central relationship of the show.
And considering this is so minuscule, it shows how desperate I am. I need to go watch some fan vids that, like, pull at your heartstrings about their relationship.
There's no time for that when we have to deal with Ortiz having a crush on a singer that he didn't think he would enjoy the music of. That's important. That's vital.
Yeah.
So in this lull in the action, the
yes.
Mariah's attack sub has used its shape-shifting capability... To rest on the sea floor and blend in, looking like a pile of rocks.
As Mr. Evil Dude gives her advice from not there.
Yes, he's coaching her over the radio.
You know, remember, hurt animal is most dangerous when it's injured.
Mm-hmm.
don't let your guard down. Like, what the fuck, dude? You're not there.
So Ford starts calling out orders, and for the rest of this sequence, Brody is like, you sure about that? You sure about that, big man?
Shut up, Brody.
He's second-guessing everything, and like, he's making Ford give his rationale for all of these orders. And like, ahead one-third speed, he has to explain, if we're a target, let's be a moving one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Brody won't just, like, do it. Or allow the helm to do it. That's not even his station.
Yeah. And what Ford is doing is very smart. It's mm-hmm. the fact that they cannot see who is shooting at them. So he's like, hey, we're gonna, like, shoot off to the port. Now we're gonna shoot off to the starboard bird. And now we're gonna, like, shoot off in a different way to try to, like, disrupt the seafloor.
Mm-hmm. Because as they began moving, they got shot at again, and they couldn't tell from where. There's nothing here but rocks. Oh my god. So Ford is shooting the rocks.
Mm-hmm.
First shot, Brody's like, okay. Second shot, okay. Ford gives the third coordinates he wants to fire a torpedo at, and Brody's like, no, don't. We only have so many torpedoes. What are you doing? In this, like, tense standoff between them, he eventually gives in, fires a third shot, and it is a direct hit on their enemy sub disguised as rocks. And Brody's like, that was a guess, wasn't it? Yeah, it totally was a guess.
But let me do my job!
And they're buddies again. His guess paid off. All right.
So Mariah shoots more. Things miss, they fire torpedoes, you know, things are happening.
The disguise being pierced, it's now just shooty-shooty dogfight time.
Yep.
And the Marauder is still calling in advice that Mariah ignores.
Yeah. But then she is out of torpedoes. And she's like, okay, fine, then we're gonna, like, go destroy each other.
Mm-hmm.
And she launches the giant squid.
She launches the giant squid because the advice she's ignoring is, like, stick and move. You got him wounded. Live to fight another day. We'll come up with another attack plan. And she's like, no, today is the only day.
And no so, day but today. Yeah.
So yes, the giant squid, specifically genetically engineered to eat the regenerating skin of the Sequest,
yes,
does that. It latches on and starts going, num, num, Sequest skin, yummy in my squid tummy. Yeah.
And the Sequest is like, hey, there are some big rocks. Let's crash into those to make the squid fall off of us. And it does.
It does.
And it loses some tentacles in the process.
The squid is never mentioned again. One must assume this fatally kills the squid.
Yes. I love that the whole plan all along was the squid is going to fuck up the Sequest. It's going to take her down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It lasted all of 2 seconds.
Well, there's a rock, paper, scissors. There's a weapon triangle.
Yeah.
The torpedo shooting has showed us that Sequest is strong against rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Rocks are strong against squid.
Uh-huh.
And squid, yummy, yummy Sequest in my tummy.
Yeah.
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 It's just proper strategy. Ford has been playing his three houses. He knows. He knows.
Yeah. Do you think he's a, like, 1, 2, 3, like, shoot person, or like 1, 2, 3?
Does he go on the offbeat or on three?
Yeah.
Is the question.
Yeah, like what does he go on? What do you think his rules of engagement are?
Well, he has them written on a laminated card. That's all I know for sure.
Yeah. Okay, if he plays tic-tac-toe, is he X's or O's?
That's resolved by coin flip.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Does he obliterate the child in the little box game?
Absolutely. Yeah. No mercy on
no
the little
mercy.
Box game. None.
You know how many times I tried to lose tic-tac-toe to our goddaughter and couldn't?
You can at least push a draw.
I tried so hard and she left me no choices.
The only moves are winning moves.
Yes! It was like 3 options that were going to make me win no matter what I did.
With the stealth gone and Ford's superior driving putting Mariah in the corner and her squid up the sleeve defeated, floating dead in the water, He sends out a request for surrender and then tells Brody she's got 5 seconds to pick up the phone and then shoot her ass.
But she picks it up and she's like, hey, you don't want to shoot me. You know why? I got Tim.
And Ford, the most intelligent person in this entire episode, is like, hey, this all started with robot duplicates.
How do I know that's really Tim? And she's like, you don't. But then, Dagwood.
The second smartest person in this entire episode.
It's like, hey, Tim, how many daggers does it take to screw in a light bulb?
And the answer is one. But I wish the answer was like, one, just you, big guy.
Yeah.
You know, something to establish a rapport and a relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Dagwood's like, no, that's him.
That's him.
I know. I know.
Because of course he does. Dagwood touches the souls of people.
Yeah. So Tim's like, do what you gotta do, Ford. Kill me if you need to. It's all my fault. Ford's like, hey, Brody, take the helm. I'll be back. As, like, Mariah's still on the camera. And Ford's like, or Brody's like, okay, man. No, like, where are you going? What are you gonna do?
And if this were a two-parter, right? Because we're running out of minutes. We know it has to be the conclusion. Of course it does. But if we aren't thinking about that, what if Mariah was like, I know that asshole. I can take him. I did it before.
Fuck you, Brody.
I was worried about Bridger, and we're already on his substitute. I got your ass.
So Ford needs to go talk to Bridger, who's luckily awake, about, like, do I kill Tim or not?
And, like, I don't know what he's looking for specifically on this point, but I appreciate that he does not get an order. He does not get instructions. He gets advice.
Yes.
And it's the same advice that Bridger gives him every time it's his turn to take command, which is follow your instincts. I trust you. You are very good at this.
Yes. Yes. Ford is back on the bridge talking to Mr. Evil Man and is like, okay, if you guys release Tim, we'll let Mariah go. We're not letting her go free, but we'll let her escape. And I will find you and track you down.
But this means with her escape, that means the danger sub that is at least as powerful as Sequest is out in the world. Perhaps getting repaired somewhere for another day.
Yes.
Their lead on the current location of the Marauder, that's gone too. But they're still making this deal because we love Tim O'Neill.
So they send a stinger out to get him. And once he's on board, Ford's like, okay, Mariah, you can leave. And I'm just over here like, now shoot her. Now shoot her. Be sure. Like, I lied. Like, it's fine.
Tracking buoy. Tag her with a tracking buoy.
Have Darwin send a bomb out. Like, something.
Mr. Ortiz, I need your most powerful sonars, please.
Lucas, hack that ship. There are so many options.
Anything. You promised to hunt her down forever. You didn't say starting tomorrow. You didn't do the, like, Hobbs and Fast Five thing. You didn't.
No.
That's not part of the deal.
I'll give you 24 hours. No, you better not be. No, we didn't say. We said I'll give her a head start. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, go!
Go. Excuse me, Mippy Pippy.
Mippy Pippy.
So our last scene of the narrative is O'Neill being treated in medbay, side by side, bed to bed, with Captain Bridger.
Those beds are bed to bed. They are so fucking close. No one can stand between them.
That's how they fit in the frame. It was the era of 4x3 television.
They could have gotten a bigger room.
And they're medbay buddies. Tim is glad to be back. He's talking about how you never see a familiar place until you return to it. Because that's when you're actually seeing it for the first time. And they compare where that sentiment came from. Bridger goes with T.S. Eliot, and O'Neill's like, I thought it was the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
That's the end.
That's the end. But then, Jonathan Brandis is there to give us kind of a fish fact. He's with a dolphin, but he tells us that littering is bad.
Yeah.
So don't trash where you splash.
That's the slogan. That's the slogan. Don't trash where you splash. In his little PSA about beach cleanups and how they protect wildlife.
Yes. So you have anything you want to say about this episode before we get to our fish facts?
I think I said it all.
Okay.
I think I did.
So do you have a fish fact for us?
Sure, sure. I got a, there's this one fish named Paul Gauguin.
Okay.
Who was indeed a stockbroker while developing his artistic skills before a market crash led to him pursuing art full time. And he did indeed make his most significant works and developments of his style on the island of Tahiti, painting and also having affairs with very young native women.
Oh.
He also made woodcuts and engraving in his artistic career. His vibrant color and use of primitivism and synthetism were influences on artists like Picasso, Matisse, and Van Gogh. In the year 2014, one of his paintings was bought by the state of Qatar for $210 million.
Jesus.
Which makes it currently the fourth highest known sale price of a piece of art of all time. As a post-impressionist, you can, of course, find several fine examples of his work at the Art Institute of Chicago.
Of course.
Of course.
Of course.
And every time we go and I see one of those Gauguins, I'm going to think, Tim O'Neill could never do this.
Yeah, no, he couldn't. His painting was awful.
Darling, if you...
You know whose painting was better? Mine.
You made a lovely watercolor.
I did. Of a lighthouse.
Of a lighthouse. Of an actual, factual lighthouse that you had seen in person the day before? 2 days before?
Like, the day before.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it looks so good.
It was so good.
So much better than Tim O'Neill. So my fish fact is about the colossal squid.
Oh.
Because I felt our little buddy didn't get enough film time.
Now, it was granted, a pretty big buddy. It was a big buddy.
This one is not genetically modified, so we're not going to go suck on the Sequest.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Leave that to the face gate in Watergate.
Yes.
Yeah. Whoa, boy.
So the colossal squid is confirmed to reach a mass of at least 1,091 pounds.
Ooh.
Though the largest specimens, known only from beaks found in sperm whales' stomachs, could put it as big as 1,300 to 1,500.
That's a lot of pounds.
That's a lot of pounds.
That's so much calamari.
They're about 14 feet in length, though...
Is that the envelope? That's got to just be the envelope, not the tentacles.
That's the thing. It's the debate of if you include the tentacles, which are normally hidden unless they're capturing prey.
Right.
So if you include those in the length, it's actually like 33 to 46 based on the few specimens that have been found.
Oh, I don't like this.
It also has the largest eye of any known creature ever to exist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It is estimated diameter of 11 to 12 inches to 16 inches, depending.
Depending, sure.
It is thought, however, that they have a very slow metabolic rate, needing only about 30 grams, so like 1 ounce of prey daily, for an adult of like 1,100 pounds.
I don't think these things are alive by the common definition. That seems wrong.
The first colossal squid to be discovered was in 1925. There have only been like 12 complete ones like found since then for them to like do studies. Most of the stuff that they found is like, again, like this little piece is like inside a sperm whale or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But in March 9th of this year, for the first time, a confirmed colossal squid was filmed in its natural environment during an expedition in the South Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It was filmed at about 2,000 feet by the Schmidt Ocean Institute's remote vehicle.
The only thing that would make this story better is if it was Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute.
I know! I was so sad! I was like, no!
We are recording this on the 40th anniversary to the day of Big Bob Ballard identifying pieces of Titanic on the North Atlantic seabed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a big day. This is a Big Bob Day.
Big Bob Day.
Big Bob Day. And therefore, Big Sequest Day.
You could say it's Colossal Bob
Day. Ah, there you go. There you go. Anyhow, that's what we have for you. Back at it again. As we are really, really running out of season two.
Yeah. Only a few episodes left.
And
then we get to season three.
Let me tell you. I don't want to spoil too much about what there is. Let me tell you some things there isn't. Demons. Ghosts of any description.
Yeah.
Greek deities will not appear in season three. So yeah. Again, big, big shift. Yes. That might sound like we're describing season one again, but no. It is another 90-degree turn, making the show three-dimensional, if you're keeping track.
So if you have enjoyed listening today, or listening all along,
mm-hmm.
you know what you should do?
What should they do?
You should leave us a rating or review wherever you listen to us. There are a lot more people listening to this show than leaving us rating and reviews, I'd like to point out.
That's just math. That is just a true thing provable by math.
So if you've not done that, you should go do that. And if it's 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, we'll read it. But we can't read one right now.
Because we're all caught up.
So go do that.
Go do it. Have some fun.
Yeah. You can also tell your friends
now
word of
mouth. That's a fun thing to do. Talking to your friends?
Talking?
That's a great time. That's why you're friends.
Yes. You can also follow us on Blue Sky. We are there as Whiskers, WSKRS.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you can follow along in our fun adventures. You can see things we are posting, such mm-hmm, as there is a guy who worked on the show who's selling his Sequest show jacket in LA. Someone go buy that for me.
Yes.
We
haven't talked about him specifically because he came on in the season three behind the camera shakeup, but
yeah.
We will, because he has a wild list of credits.
You can also use it to tell your friends.
Yes.
I think those are all the reminders.
Those are the three calls to action, because those are the three things that we think help keep the show rolling and finding new people and enriching the people we've already found.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So with that, I'm Elena.
I'm Grant. And in the words of Captain Nathan Bridger,
for beneath the surface lies the future.
Excuse me.
You're a colossal squeeze.